This is AV Week, episode number 12 for October 28th, 2011. Bionic Eyelids.
Ready.
AV Week.
Performing scan.
AV Week.
Online.
This is AV Week. It's time for AV Week, your weekly wrap-up of news and information. I am your host, Tim Albright. Hello. With us this week is Dawn Mead. She is known as AV Dawn. Hello, Dawn.
Hi, Tim.
Also with us is George Tucker. He is the engineering coordinator for World Stage. Hello, George.
Hello.
And back in the saddle, finally. He quit his job. He's living on the streets, and I had to find him in the gutter. His name is Michael Drainer. He's the manager of the Sound and AV Systems for Tech Electronics in St. Louis.
How's it going, everyone?
Good. Yesterday, we're taping this on Friday, October 28th. Yesterday, CE Pro, in conjunction with Cedia, held something called a virtual trade show. And this is the first time that I had ever heard of it. I know that they've done them before, but it was my first exposure to it. It was at ceprolive.com. It had a virtual lounge area, which, in my estimation, is basic. It was basically like a live chat. That was kind of neat. There was people from CE Pro and other organizations from EH Publications, as well as people from Cedia. They had an auditorium where you had keynotes, and they had a virtual floor show where you had virtual booths. Here's my takeaway from it, and I'll get you guys' reaction to it. This is not going to replace the Cedia show. This is not going to replace the Infocom show in June every year. However, it was an interesting experience because you guys have all been to shows. Sometimes you just want to look around and browse, I guess is the best way to put it. And it was nice not to have, you know, somebody, you know, coming up to you and trying to swipe your badge. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
So it was nice just to get the information and move on my own merry way. Is this something that is maybe the future of, not taking over or replacing the big shows, but something that people like CE Pro and other organizations can put on once a month, once every couple months. And you if you have time, you can stop by. And if you don't, no big deal, because in a couple months, it would be advisable. Michael, you're an integrator in St. Louis. You have guys coming in and out of your office. You have guys that are busy all the time, at least hopefully they are. Is something like this where they can get some education or get some information about a supplier, whether it's residential or pro, where they can sit at their desks for maybe an hour and have a one-on-one with like an engineer from Sennheiser or Bosch?
If my guys are sitting at their desk for an hour carrying on conversations, then we've got a problem, right? I mean, I what it comes down to is there are many different avenues to get information. And I attended a show very similar to this for Digital Signage Expo. They did an online version of their trade show. And, you know, it was kind of interesting. It had a lot of really neat graphical interfaces and whatnot. But I found it kind of corny at the same time. You'd go into a room and you still had the guy approaching you. Now, I didn't go to the CE Pro thing, so I don't know how the interaction was there. But somebody would walk up and they would start talking to you, chatting, "Hi, my name's so-and-so. Give me your email address. Give me your phone number." They're wanting all your information right up front. Mm-hmm. And, I just didn't find a whole lot of value in that. I could get the information I needed by just going to the website, getting the spec sheets that I needed, or contacting my manufacturer's rep and asking the specific question I had at my convenience, yeah, without trying to coordinate schedules to sit at the desk at a certain time so that I can access this content at a certain time. Just give it to me on your website. Let me download it. Let me download the speeches and the presentations on demand when I want it, how I want it, not with this little wrapper around it.
And they do have the on-demand stuff too. And Don, you're a consultant. Is having a one-on-one with the people who make the product important to you, first of all, and would doing it virtually or doing it over the computer or even doing it over Skype be beneficial? Or is this, you know, like Michael said, if you're sitting at the computer for an hour, there's a problem.
Well, you know, it really depends on the situation. Sometimes you can handle things online or on the telephone or, you know, on Skype. Other times you need that face-to-face interaction. You need that hands-on-the-box interaction, which is what you miss on a virtual trade show. I also miss this CE Pro one, but I've been to a couple of virtual trade shows now. I think that they have their place. I rather enjoyed being able to watch the live keynotes, being able to not only watch them, but then download them and have them accessible on my computer when I wanted to go back and see what did that expert say about topic A. Whereas when I go to the live trade shows and go to a keynote, unless you have a video camera or a you know, cassette recorder, you miss things. Mm-hmm. You're not going to get everything as handy as you do when it's, you know, virtual and you can come back to it. So I rather enjoyed my virtual trade show experiences, but I didn't do a ton of booth to booth, so to speak, going and, I mean, because they did come right up to you and email or text you, can I help you with anything? 99% of the time I just said, I'm just browsing. I'll get in touch with you if I have questions. And the shows I was at, that was sufficient. They, you know, left me alone then. But the ability to get all the info you needed right away on your desktop, you didn't have to worry about bringing home boxes of literature or anything.
Amen, sister.
I thought it was really great. The only thing that I truly missed is, you know, I like my swag, and there's no swag with virtual trade show. The one that I went to, they did have a drawing for an iPad. Of course, I didn't win, but, you know, they tried.
Yeah.
Well, and you do bring up a valid point, you know, being able to go back and regurgitate the content. And there was definitely some value in that portion of it. I think just in my particular activities day to day, I don't have the schedule, and a lot of people like me don't have the schedule to sit down and allocate an hour and a half, 2 hours to sit in a virtual trade show. It's difficult enough just to go away to trade shows or just to allow vendors and manufacturer reps to come in for 45 minutes. So I think it's one of those things. It's not necessarily a dig on the trade show itself. It's just one other thing vying for time of people in the industry.
You just need to manage your time better.
I knew he was going to go there. Well, but it's true because the other avenues don't let up, right? It's one other thing.
And you mentioned trying to get away to a trade show, and again, this is not going to replace either CD or
absolutely
or
not.
But the combination of being able to download it, like Dawn said, and having it kind of not necessarily on your time because obviously some of this stuff is going on live,
right?
But the ability to go back and say, you know, here's an opportunity. If you have some time during lunch or you have a couple hours, you can block off, you know, to have a one-on-one. I at least found some value with it. George, I know that you're a live guy, so you hate this thing.
It not takes necessarily, just it like did. I don't hate, you know, doing remote education. For me, any kind of online trade show would have to be very specific, though. I'm not going there to see a collection of different solutions. I want to talk to maybe the guys that do all the media servers, and I would do that so that I could have a one-stop, talk to them, get information, and move aside. That would be beneficial to me. Otherwise, you know what? It just feels like me playing around in Second Life or World of Warcraft without the adventure.
So. without the quests.
You know, it's interesting you say that because I was at an education show not too long ago, and there was a – I don't remember what the university was, some private university in the state of Missouri. They use Second Life to conduct their staff meetings.
There are a number of educational places that use Second
Life. It was interesting. And then I found out that there's major corporations who do this. Mm-hmm. It's like a whole other online culture I wasn't aware of.
Absolutely.
It's quite interesting.
Yeah. This is not anything about CE Pro or the CE Pro Live, but for the last few weeks I have been going back and forth with my CEDIA folks. And the ESCE that came out of CEDIA, the ESC, that's what they wanted themselves to be called. I have come up with a mascot, as it were. So every time you think you hear the word ESCE, I want you to think of the Ewoks. That is their new mascot to me. I'm going to get hate mail for that one.
Okay.
Because that's what I think of. I think of a little free little guy, ESCE, with a spear.
I want you to see the responses on that one.
You're a little too detailed in this. You've been thinking about this too.
He's had way too much time.
I don't know why. It just ever since the guys came back from Cedia, and I think it was Rich Fergoza who brought it up, and said that They were, you know, ESCs, which was the what the what CEDIA has say, you know, the contractors to call themselves now. And I think he's the one who coined the phrase ESCE. And ever since then, this image of a small little furry creature has been creeping in my brain, and now I've got it now. It's an Ewok. You know, blame George Lucas for that one. So
you need a hobby, sir.
I do. I'm sorry.
Like making full-size reproductions of battleships with matchsticks or something, because really...
Don't give him ideas, please.
I can make the Millennium Falcon.
Please don't give him ideas. He's a Han Solo freak. He'll go out and build the Millennium Falcon, and then he'll turn Chewbacca into an Ewok.
He shot first. I'll give him that.
Michael Papel, or People, I don't care because I don't like him. He ran MCSI down in Florida for a few years, ran it into the ground, so much so that he got sent to or was being charged. The district judge came down and basically this guy was facing eight to ten years for what he did, and basically what he's being charged with is cooking the books, hiding the debt, and not really coming clean. It was a publicly the company that had shareholders and 1,300 employees and all this stuff. This guy ran it into the ground, so much so that he was being charged with something illegal. He's facing up to 10 years. He got 7 days, 1 week in prison. He also has to pay a $5 million fine, but. George, I'll start with you. Is this fair? MCSI Incorporated was a computer company, but it was also an AV company in Florida. Is this fair for a guy who basically ruined the lives of 1,300 employees and almost 300 investors? Or was justice served here?
I've only been following this case a little bit on the side. I mean, you couldn't avoid it in some of the trade magazines, but...
Yeah.
My first reaction was, I'm doing it wrong. Because the guy,
yeah.
How did people get away with this? You know what I mean? And your point exactly that. If you read the article full through, the judge says, well, there was, you know, concern, and people wrote in and talked to the judge directly about the effect on the family and how people depend on him. And
okay,
what about the 1,300 people families depended on as well?
I'm terribly sorry, but if I go out and kill somebody, the judge is not going to take into consideration that I'm the sole breadwinner for my wife and two kids.
I don't know if I would make that reference or the connection to the killing, but yeah, it's still – I mean, white-collar crime is being given this pass. the second thought I had when I read about it, and I'm thinking white-collar crime, all I could think is Occupy Pebble.
Huh? Oh, geez, Louise.
Is that his name?
Yes. Yeah, I got
now,
it now.
I'll tell you this right now. It gave me a turn of the stomach, and I'll bet even money he'll be back in court before the next year is out.
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely going to be I'm by no means an attorney or a law expert when it comes to law, but I'm sure that there's going to be some, you know, he's got the criminal trials, and then I don't know if there's going to be some civil suits that follow. But what I found interesting is this one line where it says the judge declined to order Papel to pay any restitution, saying that it would not be practical because the number of employees and investors affected. Really? So you're going to let him off just because of the number of people?
No, I get it. That's one part. I actually do agree with the judge. There's no point in wasting the ink to make this guy pay hundreds of million dollars in restitution when all he's going to do is turn around and file bankruptcy.
Yeah, I understand that. That's true, too. But I don't know. I just think the whole thing's – go ahead, Dawn.
I was going to say, but on the other hand, I mean, by declining – to order restitution, even if the people know they're never going to see a cent of it, at least they have that sense of justice that he was ordered to pay me back because he screwed up.
That is
he
right.
did wrong, and it's been recognized that he did wrong. And, I mean, it's just obscene that people get away with this. Yeah. You know, there are kids out there, you know, idiot kids that get longer prison sentences for, you know, graffiti than this guy's getting for ripping off millions of dollars and basically destroying thousands of people's lives.
Well,
I mean, it's one of those times that, you know, whether I agree with them or not, it's stories like this that make me think maybe those Occupy people aren't entirely lunatics.
Like, well, there was
you know,
I was going to say there was a piece going around the Twitterverse and Facebook last week that said, you know, there was a homeless guy who got sent up for a couple of years for stealing $100, and there was this high executive CEO who got a slap on the wrist for, you know, bilking a company of millions of dollars. So,
right. I mean, it's definitely a miscarriage of justice, you know, and I think he should have gotten more order of restitution or more prison time or something, because you have to let people know that it's wrong. You know, the whole point of the prison system is to act as a deterrent. And if you're just going to let them off with a slap on the wrist, going to do it again.
Yeah.
Well, that's just either order the restitution, force him to file bankruptcy and let him feel the pain of what he caused everybody else, or let him serve the prison sentence, one or the other. But he's getting off scot-free.
You know, the part of the decision was that she said the judge said that he would have to do community service. My opinion, he should do community service, helping out each one of the families throughout the next 2 years that were laid off because of his responsibilities. That would be equal justice.
Find them jobs. That can be your community
service.
Exactly.
Or clean their house every week or something. Have to face them. Have to be there in their presence.
That's right. To rip off Harry Potter, turn him into their house elf and make him get in the kitchen and clean the floors.
Very nice. Steve Jobs passed away a few weeks ago, and Walter Isaacson was already in the process of writing a biography at Steve Jobs' behest, no less. I actually started reading this book, and Isaacson writes in the introduction that Jobs contacted him in 2004 about writing his biography, and Isaacson's first response was, "Not yet. You know, I'll write your biography in 10 or 20 years after you retire and all this jazz." One thing led to another, and this is from Isaacson's book, Isaacson's book about Steve Jobs. In 2009, Steve's wife called Walter Isaacson and said, "If you're going to do it now." So they got together and they had a number of conversations. And one of them, and this is from our buddies over at Rave Pubs, Walterson said that Jobs was talking about his vision for improving the TV experience. Jobs said, quote, "I'd like to create an integrated television set that is completely easy to use. It would be seamlessly synced with all of your devices and with iCloud," of course, talking about the Apple cloud service. "It will have the simplest user interface you can imagine. I finally cracked it." Guys, when somebody like Steve Jobs says, "I finally cracked it," I think the guys at Rave Pubs have a good point here. Their question is Apple HDTV Steve Jobs' final legacy? Don, do you think that he has one more thing from beyond the grave here?
You know, I would not be surprised. Put it that way. He has been party to some of the greatest innovations of the past 30 years in technology. It wouldn't surprise me. You know, we have authors all the time that leave manuscripts unfinished and notes unfinished that ghostwriters and family members can finish years after their death and publish. And we still have rappers that were deceased a decade ago still releasing albums from their recorded tracks.
Yeah.
So I would not be shocked at all to find someone like Steve Jobs having, you know, a great idea or a couple of great ideas left on the table with notes, with things in production or things in beta. I mean, this stuff doesn't come to market overnight. You know, he doesn't wake up one day and say, "I've got it," and it's in the stores the next day. So I think we'll be hearing from him for quite a while yet to come.
George, is this the next big thing? Apple TV? Real TV?
Given what the main point of this article, I think, too, that was sort of buried in a paragraph was, it's the ecosystem that's going to be the selling point. And mm-hmm. He's got the backbone, the framework to make this happen. I have no doubt, given his ability to redesign and reconceive things that we never thought we would go the way he says, yes, absolutely, this is the best way. That it will be a success if that is. And he's been trying to do this for years. I mean, he had Apple TV back in the 90s. They tried it again, even with the Apple TV little Netflixy type hard disk boxes. He's got the ecosystem to do it. But even in parts, just more, as I was listening to an NPR interview with the author of the biography, And he talked about how when Jobs was going in for an operation, they would put the mask on him, and he was, you know, half out of it with the sedatives and everything else. And he tore the mask off, saying, "I hate this thing. Get me another one." And then he was like, "This is the worst design thing I've ever seen. I need to find a way to make it better. Give me five different masks so I can try them." And this was his sort of MO of, "Give me five options."
Yeah.
And it's just that incredible focus. He might just break it where most of us don't see an opportunity. He's going to make an entire new market that could either help or hinder us. But I'm on pins and needles to see what it is, actually.
But that hasn't that been the nature of his legacy anyway? I mean, he's really kind of revolutionized the mobile devices, the portable devices, the way we interact with various technologies. And I'm not a bit surprised to see this possibly coming down the line.
Well, and he wasn't. People made comparisons between him and Alexander Graham Bell and, right. and Henry Ford, and my mind just went blank. Light bulb.
What, Thomas Jefferson?
Thank you.
Or Edison. Sorry, Thomas Jefferson. Wow.
That right there is the product of a rural public school system. Right there. That's all I'm going to say. Yes, Thomas Edison.
That's what I
Thomas
said.
Jefferson.
Edison.
Eventually,
I said Edison.
Eventually you said Edison. And I don't know that that is valid because Edison was a pure inventor.
Right.
You can argue different right. things, and you can argue AC/DC in his fight with Tesla all day long. But some of the stuff that he did, he really did conceive it himself, and he really did mm-hmm. come out of it himself. Jobs never really did that. Jobs took a idea and made it better. MP3 player was not the iPod was not the first MP3 player.
No.
It was the best one. You know, the Macintosh was not the first personal computer at the time. You could probably argue that it was the best one. Pixar was not the first computer animated company. I would still say it's the best one, and so would my 3-year-old.
But I think that's the legacy that he leaves. I think the legacy that he leaves is taking products that we currently have and technologies we currently use and making them, what you just said, better. That's really the Apple MO, and that's what Jobs built. And this is no different. I mean, we have HDTV. We've got control systems. We've got interfaces and media delivery systems. We've got all that. If he can take all that and make it all nice and easy the way he said, and especially using the new apps that are available on the iPhone 4 and some of the mm-hmm. voice recognition things that are going on, you're going to have an amazing product.
Can you imagine – and I don't have an Apple device. I have an Android phone. But can you imagine Siri in your TV in your house? You say Siri or app or however you address the software. You know, find me – Good Eats. Find me Alton Brown and find me Good Eats. And up on the screen there shows, you know, what's currently playing, what's on your HD, what's on your DVR. And you say, Siri, play, you know, episode 594 or whatever. That to me is the simplest interface.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And that's what I get out of this.
Yeah, me too.
That's where I see this heading.
We'll stay on the Apple train for a minute here. They were awarded a patent for the iOS swipe to scroll gesture. Don, is this going to be an issue for people like AMX and Crestron and you know Claire Controls and other devices that, or other control companies that have graphical user interfaces for their control companies? Is this going to be an issue for them? Because a lot of those guys have come out with something similar to the iPhone interface because it's so ubiquitous.
It very likely could be. I mean, we're going to be looking at a lot of licensing issues or a lot of rethinking of how we do things to make it just as easy as the swipe without actually using a swipe. Honestly, I'm more surprised that it was actually approved as a patent because it is such a ubiquitous thing. Granted, you know, they came up with it first, but, I mean, didn't almost turning the page of a book come up with that first? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's a gesture that humans have used for generations. So I'm really surprised that the patent office actually gave it to them as a patent. Once enforcement happens, who knows what's going to happen? I mean, my Android phone, I swipe to unlock, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's everywhere. Everybody swipes for everything these days. So mm-hmm. it's going to be a nightmare to enforce, first of all. it may be a losing battle on their front. But second of all, I'm just shocked that it actually was given to them as a patentable idea.
Well, and some of that is also the state of the patent office, too. I mean, that's, you know, there have been people championing the fact that we should not patent software because it's not, you know, innovative and stuff like that. So, George, is this...
Well, Mike, go ahead. My question is, wasn't the slide bolt the first slide to unlock?
Yeah.
Well, yes.
You know, hey, Iron Age man, you missed your patent.
Right.
come on. And exactly. It's night to unlock. Yes,
it's more Russian than.
I mean, all right. Well, you know. So, that being said, this seems to me almost the inverse of that apocryphal story about the patent office, where in the 1800s, some director of the patent office wanted to shut it down because there was nothing left to invent.
Yes,
we're on the sort of almost opposite end of that, of them saying, "Well, there's everything left to invent, and every nuance is a new patent." You know, I mean, look at it this way. We eat food. Our experiences in what we do and what we eat change our DNA. It actually modifies our DNA to a certain extent. Are they going to start patenting that process? How far does it go? And I don't want to give, you know, too much to saying you can't patent anything, but come on, guys. There are certain simple acts that, yes, you're the first to do it, and if they're using the exact same mechanism as you, then you have a right to go on that patent. But I haven't read through the entire patent, obviously, but that patent better be very specific to the very specific, definite way that they do it. Otherwise, I think it's just it's unfair to innovation.
No, I do too.
And it does state in the article here that the abstract applies to handheld computers, tablet computers, personal digital assistants, and cellular telephones, and that it's the movement of a point of contact on a touch-sensitive display. But it's still just a basic human gesture that they're patenting and trying to enforce. And this is the same company, remember, that trademarked the term Apple, which is a common word,
mm-hmm.
and then tried to take down other organizations using that word. They went after Apple Records, who were the recording company that the Beatles used or founded or something in the UK. They went after Apple Records that had existed decades before Apple, the computer company, existed. And they went after them, obviously, when they were taking all of their analog records and putting them on digital format, saying, we own Apple in the digital world. You can't use it. And, you know, I can't remember the outcome of that case. I think the judge said enough's enough. Come on, guys.
Yeah.
And that it's just going to be another nightmare like that, where people are going to fight back, hopefully, because it's what we do. We swipe. We, you know, I go back to the book. I'm a book nerd, you know. I've always swiped to turn my pages.
Yeah.
And I swipe to turn the page when I'm reading an ebook. It's not an Apple thing. It's a human thing.
No, but now, Dawn, you have to pay Apple a certain percentage of your book sales.
Because try you to collect.
You know, one of the actual results of that Apple Records versus Apple computer is the Sosumi sound. If you've ever looked at that classic Apple sound, that ding mm-hmm. sound, mm-hmm. its name is Sosumi. Almost looks like sashimi. What mm-hmm. it really means is, all right, the judge said there's a certain agreement we have to abide by with you, Apple Records. But guess what? So sue me. Here it is. And they made noise because it was about audio, and it's called
right.
So sue me. Go look it up
right.
If you're an Mac guy. There it is.
Tim's looking it up right
I'm
now.
I'm looking it up now.
Well, and you know, one of the things that's going to come out on this is the enforceability of it, because what you're going to find is, you know, there's something very unique about the way that Apple does their scrolling. And the question is, you know, is the Android scrolling the same rate, the same pace? Is the decay time as long whenever you let your finger off of it? You know, how detailed is this thing going to really get? Is it just the gesture of swiping, or is it the way in which the swipe works? So we'll see what happens once they.
Somebody with...
Oops.
What was that?
I was trying to get the sound up. So
gotcha.
All right, you're listening to AV Week as I try to play the Sosumi sound. With us this week is AV Dawn. She's Dawn Mead. She's a blogger, a consultant. She's part of Gary Kay's Rave Blog Squad. So is George Tucker. Thankfully, I don't have to say those three words again. He's also from World Stage. And the Yahoo on the other side of my desk is Michael Drainer. He's the manager of the Sound and AV Systems. for Tech Electronics. Speaking of Gary, Rave Publications had another article I would like to bring up, simply because the name of this meter I think is really cool. Harkness Screens launches the Lumens Meter. George, you're a standards lover. I say with tongue firmly in cheek. Is this something really cool, or is this just a light meter with the name Lumens Meter slapped on top of it?
It's Lumens? I thought you said Lupins.
Stop it.
But no one gets that Lambert's. Your life or your Lupins? Lumens, I mean. I love this thing. I think this is really cool. This is sort of the bigger version. I mean, look, we have photographers who use these light meters to get the accurate reading. Yeah. We've done it on the graphic screens for Macs and other devices for those graphic artists who are using stuff. You would, you know, put that suction cup on the screen and get it to be true color. It's a really important, especially for the size of screens that they're saying this thing is applicable to. I don't know if this is really for your average home theater, you know, maybe for the sort of mega million-dollar ones. But it's a really cool tool. As to how beneficial it would be for your average AV installer, I don't know. But the image they have in the little marketing material is a big cinema screen. And its point is to make sure that you get even light distribution, which we all know is really important, especially in 3D. I can't believe I said that word in a positive manner. But, you know, and so that there's an even and you don't get any hot spots or there's none of that glare or the fuzziness. It's a great tool to have, and it seems to be very simple to use. You don't have to have this awkward architecture. It's just this one little box that almost looks like an SPL meter.
Yeah, it does.
They do make some very big warnings in this thing, though, like, you know, don't keep the light on in white with your projector for too long and all that kind of stuff, which is kind of very interesting to see that it would really actually damage the lensing of the projectors.
Well, and this thing, if I'm reading this, the material right, it spits it out in foot Lamberts, which for projector guys and screen guys, this is important because it's always kind of difficult, and it's always I'm sure that somebody out there is really smart, much smarter than I am, when it comes to, you know, how many foot Lamberts per square inch, or I'm sorry, per square foot, and do you do Lamberts, or do you do nits, or do you do all this other fancy math that... Again, I'm not smart enough to know, so... Anywho. Don, do you think... Oh, go ahead, Michael.
No, go ahead.
Are you going to buy one of these for your guys?
Well, you know, I'm interested in seeing exactly how it works. I didn't get to read
you too, turn it on,
too deep into the article.
You put it at the screen.
Yes, I understand that. I mean, as
you
far as...
You push the button.
You know,
the numbers come out on the LED.
Yes. Anybody else want to slap him? Because I'll be glad to put one in for you.
Since I'm here. Sorry. Go ahead, Mike.
I'm actually waiting for it to show up on consultant specs, and maybe Don can speak to that because, you know, you get those. We've got our methods for verifying that we're meeting, you know, certain quality criteria and things like that. So I'm just waiting for a consultant to say it must be this particular meter and it must read 30-foot Lamberts at 10 feet, whatever the case may be. And then, of course, I'll have to put them in all my technicians' trucks and, you know, that'll be the end of it. But it's definitely a good method for confirming that your design meets what your original criteria were. And you know, I think that we need something like that.
And
so
if it does
what they say it does, I think it'll be a great benefit.
Yeah, Don, for that, I'm really, really excited. All joking aside with Yahoo, I'm really excited because it does give you a – this is really what we're getting.
It's an objective measurement.
Yeah.
It's not somebody's subjective opinion. It's an objective measurement of what the light output is of the projector. And I also see, you know, we do a lot of preventive maintenance and service agreements and things like that.
Exactly.
So I see this a tool that I put into my inspectors and my technicians' hands. They go out 2 years after a projector's installed. They can see the degradation of the lamp.
Yeah.
They can see, you know, what's happening to that product over time.
Right. And the last time I appeared on the podcast, one of our topics was the very uselessness of specs, particularly things like lumens.
I wish I would have been on that one because we would have had a fun time with that.
and we did. We discussed it. You know, it's such a meaningless measurement.
It is.
In a lot of ways because, I mean, I came from marketing. I've always been in marketing in the industry. But, you know, for frankly, a lot of BS artists. And anything that can sell your product or make it sound good makes it sound technical, customers see that and they want this one because it has a higher number than that one, but they don't really mean anything right. when you see them side by side and they look identical, you know. So I think something like this would be fantastic just for the reason that you guys said. It's an objective measurement. We can actually see what we're getting out of the projector. And like you said, on service calls, you can see what's going on with the bulb or the projector or the degradation. You know, down the road, who knows? Maybe we'll find out company A versus company B. One has a better lasting product that's provable as opposed to anecdotal. You right. know, so I think there is a very good place for this if it does everything that it's – you know, saying it will.
Right.
Again,
and I think
again, marketing.
Yeah, again, marketing. So you know, taking this to the next level, you know, what's the step to make this better? And that is to measure ambient light, compare it to projected light, and give us the difference in how many foot lamerts you actually have hitting the screen, not just what's the projector putting on there, but what's the additive effect of the entire environment. So. Well,
and something also, a part of that conversation, Dawn, was about LED projectors
right.
and the inherent problem with getting specs on LED projectors. You put a light meter, and I don't know about this meter because I haven't used it on an LED projector. You put a light meter on an LED projector, you're not going to get what it really represents. You and Dawn and George and I talked about this. You put that up against a comparable 2,000 lumens, let's say, projector because it's round numbers. That an LED projector that is as bright to your eye as a 2,000 lumens projector is not going to give you 2,000 lumens worth of light.
Right. And that is the inherent flaw with right. both the current standards and this box. But, you know, at least it's a start.
Yeah, yeah.
Right.
And I'd be interested to see it, you know, see what kind of reading it would give us.
Well, you know, I just tuned a big system, Friday. And one of the things that the consultant and I were talking about is the objective versus the subjective measurement. You know, your measurement tools are telling you one thing, but when you look at it, you know it's not right.
Yeah.
And it, just like an audio, you know, you hear one thing and you know that's not what your meter's telling you. So you have to use the objective to get your baseline, but then you have to qualify that with the subjective measurement at the end of the day. Right. The two must go hand in hand.
Yeah. Alrighty. From commercial integrator, this comes to us from Craig McCormick. Craig is a diehard Red Sox fan. And for that, I will apologize for any comments that I make as a diehard St. Louis Cardinal fan, which, as we record this, is getting ready to play Game 7 of the World Series.
Goodbye, Rangers.
I'm sorry. Yeah.
Rest in peace.
It's to get to the AV part of this. Fraunhofer dialogue enhancement drowns out quote unquote awful announcers. Craig has some issues with Joe Buck and Tim McCarver, who they do the Fox broadcasts. I will say this as much about my previous life. One of my first jobs in radio was at KMOX, which. For those of you in St. Louis, know that that's a big radio station in St. Louis. That's pretty much it. But I worked with Joe's dad, Jack. So I have a personal affinity for Joe and for his family. So I'll say that before I go on with Craig's ripping of Joe and Tim's broadcasting. But basically, Craig goes on to say that he doesn't much care for Joe Buck and Tim McCarver's calling of the World Series. So his thinking is there has to be a better way. Well, according to Craig, the guys at Fraunhofer IIS have got this thing. And what it is, they released it at the Audio Engineering Society show in New York City. And what I'm gathering is, they ran it as a pilot program over in England. It allows anybody watching TV and also radio audiences to individually adjust the volume of dialogue, music, or sound effects within a single broadcast program. George, is this something that, you know, Craig's going to be really excited to go out and buy, or is this just, you know, a gimmick?
I've actually seen some of this. I really like it. I'm a big fan of radio, so when I listen to radio announcers, most of the games I listen to, I really do actually try. I turn down the volume, and I listen to the radio broadcast. Why? Because it's much more descriptive. And honestly, I'm half the time I'm sort of distracted by something else I'm doing while I'm watching some sporting event. And I agree, there are some of the national announcers which are less than stellar, at least for the local fan, if not for the general fan watching across the country, I guess. But my thing is, this should have been possible 10 years ago. Mm-hmm. And I don't see, you know, there's nothing really new to it other than someone's had the ability now, I guess, to get it licensed and get it into boxes that broadcasters will use. I don't know how this bodes for the broadcasters and their agents and their money, but I would really be able, love to be able to choose which one I want at what level. Absolutely. I love this little box.
Well, and Don, this goes back to, I mean, years ago. Like I said, in St. Louis, Jack Buck was the St. Louis Cardinals, and so I knew many people, both in the business and out of the business, who would watch it on television but turn down the sound and turn on KMOX. So are am I reading this right? Are they just kind of making that use case easier?
I think that it does make that sort of thing easier. I mean, I grew up in Pittsburgh. I'm a Pittsburgh girl. So, you know, we used to watch Steeler games and turn off the sound for the national guys and listen to Myron Cope. Yoy, you know, the great late Myron Cope.
Oh, yeah.
Fantastic, you know. And I know my in-laws still do the same thing when they watch the Redskins. They'll turn off the sound of Fox or whatever and put on the D.C. radio so they could hear their announcers talk about their team. But what I find interesting about this, and what I think could really make this technology just vital to everybody's everyday life, is not even the sports application. I'm a sports fan. I love it for that reason. But if it can actually control the music or sound effects, I know a million billion little old ladies and little old men that would just kill for this on their TV when the commercials come on and the music is so loud or the commercial is so loud,
yeah,
but they have to then crank the volume back up to hear the dialogue on their shows. To be able to control those elements independently, I know all the people over a certain age in this nation would just kiss you for inventing it. And, you know, even younger folks, I there are times that I do the same thing. I think if it does what it promises, it's a fantastic innovation.
I just think it's unfortunate we have to go to an aftermarket third-party device to make that happen when our broadcasters should be taking care of that for us. And I could say that coming from the broadcast world. I built television stations for 6 years, worked for a local broadcast group. And we tried very hard to try to level that stuff out. But, boy, I'll tell you what, the media companies, they don't like that. They want their commercials out there long and loud and hard.
Oh, yeah.
They want to grab their attention. So I think something like this would be a great benefit to the consumer market if it truly does what they say it does. I'm a little concerned about how it does it and, you know, the effects on the audio quality and things like that when you start dealing with phase interactions and shifts and what that does to stereo images and surround sound systems. But when you're talking about grandma, you know, watching it on her old tube TV, I think it would work well.
Yeah.
Yep.
George, in your neck of the woods, and I'm sure you ran straight down there. You were the first one in line because of how much you love 3D. There was the 3D World Conference 2011 in New York City.
So yeah, how
was it? No, how was it? I mean, you were the first one in line. You.
I was. I had a week's supply of popcorn and soft drinks to get me through it. I did.
And which glasses do you use, George? Because you have your own personal GT 3D glasses. So do you use the active shuttering ones or the passive shuttering ones? Or
no, I actually use Jonathan Post 3D glasses. Don't know who that is? There is a wonderful YouTube post of this guy named Jonathan Post. Just look it up. It says 3D, no glasses. In which he connects electrodes to his eyelids and has them shutter in a rhythm so that he doesn't need the active glasses. He just does it. I tend to think that this is a spoof, but it is a hysterical thing to see.
Why would you do that?
I don't know. It's because innovation is king.
Yes.
What I did like about this article was that they're seriously thinking about and did talk a lot about where the in-between phase is fuzzy, to quote the article, about going from the 4K 3D to from where we currently are. It's not for you and me right now, and I don't think it's for many people at the moment, but they need to push product. And the article even says, the manufacturers are so excited about pushing new product and forcing new formats. And I'm like, you know what, guys? You tried to do this before. Blu-ray's not going to exist very much longer because you took too long to do it, you fought it out, and nobody wants it.
Yeah.
So, you know, although to that end, just quickly, there is a gentleman whose opinion I respect a great deal that's mentioned in this article, Mark Shubin. If you get the chance to find Mark Shubin online, he is a font of information, an early HDTV engineer and all this other kind of stuff. And one of the people that I actually used to subscribe to a memo that he put out every Monday called Mark Shubin's Monday Morning Memo, which detailed everything about HDTV in the 90s, from prices to technology. And I actually, as an homage, named my very first blog after him, the Tucker Tuesdays Tertiary Tidbits and Technical Trollings.
Say that 10 times.
Yeah, well, but it was an homage. When I first thought of naming a blog, it was like Mark Shubin's. That's just because it is the preeminent information font. But other than them saying this could be cool one day, it's still, as they said, fuzzy.
Well, and Don, isn't also some of this done being pushed by not just the manufacturers, but also for the content creators? Every kids movie, and that's, you know, I have small children, has both a 3D version and a 2D version, and they want to go see the 3D version. Well, you know what? I don't want to go see the 3D version because, first of all, I don't like 3D. Secondly, it costs me $10 more.
Right. You know, that is definitely a push. If you've read my blog at any length of time, you know I'm not a big, huge 3D fan. I think it's a fad. But right now it's a fad that's making the money, so they're going to keep pushing it. But it's just yet another, you know, let's see how quick we can invent it and get people to buy it and sucker them into it. And if it involves changing all the standards all over the industry, well, so be it, which the manufacturers love and the people selling the stuff love to a point. But those that actually have to integrate or change everything or try to upgrade systems, you know, we don't love so much usually. So we'll see where it goes. We'll see how long it lasts. I kind of think we're on a 3D bubble just based on history with the different phases 3D has come in, you know, over the years since the 1920s even. So it goes for a while really gangbusters and then it dies off. I'm just waiting for the die-off.
Yeah, I'm with you, Don. I'm just, you know, like Tim, I don't want to see the 3D. The whole deal with changing infrastructure, that's a big deal. But I just want those fancy little 3D to 2D glasses that Tim was telling me about the other day.
Oh, yeah. But they mentioned it last week on the show.
Did they?
Cedia. At Cedia,
is that where it was?
One of the biggest things was the fact that they have glasses now that will turn your 3D image into 2D.
And that's actually a good thing because some people can't handle 3D physically. Right. I mean, if everybody could handle the effect of 3D, there wouldn't be disclaimers a mile long on every 3D device that's sold, and they wouldn't have already pulled the Nintendo 3D because it was giving kids seizures or whatever. They just, you know, quit selling it. So
the guy sitting across from me has an astigmatism. Right. And Michael can't see 3D. 2 years ago?
No, it was last year.
At
Infocom.
Last year, yeah. year before last at Infocom, they had the 3D pavilion, and Michael and I were sitting in the sweet spot, or the hot spot, I can't remember which one they called it. But we're looking at this auto stereoscopic display, and we're standing shoulder to shoulder with each other. And I'm looking at the 3D image, and yes, it's 3D, and I get it, and it's, you know, I think we were looking at an aircraft or something like that. And he can't see it. He sees two images, you know. And so there are legitimate... One thing about this real quick. This is something that came out, actually out of CD that I caught this week, was Kinex Pro Cube Up turns 2D into 3D. It's a device. It's not in a shape of a cube, but it's called a cube. In addition to being a 4x1 HDMI switcher, it's also has some processing things that will also it lets you take your 3D picture and adjust the depth and scaling. Is this something that's interesting, especially from a depth standpoint, that anybody thinks is cool, or am I just, you know, I don't know. I don't know why I brought it up. I don't like 3D. Why did I bring it up?
And the room was silent.
Yeah.
I don't like 3D. I got to say, though, I will say that before hearing that Michael can't see 3D, I was about to say, yeah, and the box cures cancer, too. Who cares? But And I also was looking at how they said, you know, you can quantify every little aspect of it and you know, tweak it. I'm like, God, forget the Jet of the Post, you know, electrodes on the glass. That'll give me a headache just having to see some like dwarf this thing, right?
Right.
But if 3D ever becomes a standard that is, you know, more standard than not, this is something that I would see someone like Michael or having in my back pocket as, hey, you couldn't see it? Okay, fine. We're going to make it so that your TVs or your vision of that TV is down to a level, forgive me for saying down to, but at a level that you can actually watch. I had heard all the drunks and children and pregnant women shouldn't use the 3DS, you know, 3D thing, but this is a whole new part of it for me.
Well, I agree. I mean, having gone on the record multiple times as being, you know, not anti-3D, but not entirely bought into it, one of my biggest complaints about it is...
Don't backpedal, you're anti-3D.
No, I
we're wanted, all anti-3D here.
I think we're in agreement.
I have paid to see 3D movies. I do enjoy the experience sometimes, but I don't want it all the time. And I am too cheap, frankly, to pay for a 3D TV.
Amen,
that
sister.
May or may not show mm-hmm. everything the way I want to see it when it's not a 3D thing. And so prior to a box like this existing, you had to buy a 3D TV and a 3D player and the 3D media to play in the player, to play on the screen, to get the full effect and to have the great, you know, perfect image. If you had something like this, I can use my existing TV or I can use my existing equipment and upscale it or, you know, what have you, if it works the way I'm reading it here. And having an aftermarket box that's maybe a little expensive, but not usually so, I'm a lot more 3D friendly, if not 3D welcoming. You know, I'll never be 3D welcoming because it is a fad. But to take advantage of the fad while it's here, I would want a small box I could pay for instead of a whole doggone new system that would cost thousands of dollars.
Yeah,
I think there's a point here, though, when you said about the John Cameron. Is that the director? This technology has been around forever, and I will make a division. I am against 3D in the home or as a general broadcast medium.
Yes.
But I did see Avatar, and Avatar did prove that it is plausible to use a technology when you have a story, and that story can be translated into that effect effectively, to repeat myself. But
right.
And so there is that delineation. I would go to see more 3D movies in the theater. I wouldn't see them at home. And maybe if I had enough money to create a home theater that is of a size and space that works, maybe I would. But I don't see it becoming a general medium other than that. So there is that delineation, though.
Right.
When we say we hate it, it's hate it in the home.
The only time I will allow a 3D system in my home is when they have perfected the holodeck. And then I will be first in line.
Then we'll just live out the movies.
Yes.
That's a scary day.
This is
Second Life in 3D.
Jeez. this is more of a shout out and a congratulation to our friend AV Jessica and the folks at AVISPL. Infocom certified their Project Management Academy. People can earn up to 35 CTS credits, which I think is kind of cool. It's a recognition from Infocom about this academy. Don, is this? I don't know much about the PM Academy because I don't work for AVISPL. But is this something that other people and other companies should aspire to, or is it just, you know, they've been at this for so long and this is just Infocom's way of saying, you know, yay, way to go.
You know. Prior to joining the membership committee of Infocom, which I'm on now, I was a longtime member of PETSI, the Professional Education and Training Committee. And anything in our industry that provides an opportunity for education and renewal units and certification and advancement of our industry as a whole gets my wholehearted support. So kudos to AVISPL for this and that it was good enough or effective enough that Infocom is recognizing and certifying it to get renewal units. Fantastic. The part of me that comes from the integration world still sees AVISPL as the big guy and the enemy, so to speak. But provided that this Project Management Academy is open to even employees of other integrators that want to come and learn from a certified academy to learn the skills that they would need, I think it's a fantastic effort. It proves that they know their stuff and that they're willing to give back to the industry by sharing their knowledge and their experience with others. And I would like to take classes there, frankly, and beef up my project management skills if, you know, other integrators and other industry folks that aren't just their customers can take the classes. I say, excellent. Yeah. Good job.
Did you happen to find information regarding eligibility to attend the classes? Because I couldn't find anything on that. It appeared to me that it was their own internal program for their project managers and their staff.
Right.
Did you find anything like that?
I haven't found anything like that, but okay. I will certainly contact Jessica.
I think we probably need to find out, because that's one of the things. I'd be happy to send all my project management team to an academy like that. It would be great benefit, because we got guys with PMP certifications and things like that in construction and whatnot, and as you know, the PM process for AV is different. You know, the way you interact with the user and all the resources that are required. And anything, I'm on board with you. Anything that we can do to further the education of people, let's do it.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. Yeah.
You know, to that point, I was scolded on a show I did with John Huntington for Sense of Special. Yeah. If you shameless plug, if you haven't seen it, please go. John Huntington's about his haunted hotel.
And George, where can people go listen to this special?
Like, iTunes soon, I hope, but no, on avnation.tv.
Oh,
go
bite
now.
Me. Jeez.
Listen often, listen early, listen often.
I've been telling him a long time to get all those on that iPad or iTunes stream. Yep.
So here's the deal, though. John is an educator as well as a longtime IATSE member and a person who's into show control. Anyway, we talked about his haunted hotel, in which he does with his school, his class, his seniors, I think. They create this entire sensor-based, IT-frameworked haunted house, right? But one of the first things John said when he agreed to do the show was, yeah, I got a bone to pick. We always talk on this show about that there's no real classification or education or, real sort of degree in this. Well, John came back and go, we do it here at Brooklyn Tech, City Tech in Brooklyn, New York. To which I have to do another mea culpa, saying that I've hired several of his guys.
This is where
I'm still
George
going
goes,
on that. Dope. Yeah, dope. But so there is more to it than just that. So this is a great thing. I think it looks really cool, especially for the CTSD and I would say, again, this is that, do we go on site or do we not go on site for training?
Yeah.
This one is one of those I would agree with Don. I would go if I was allowed to be part of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would too. But yeah, congratulations to AV Jessica and all the folks at AVI SPL. So that's all the stories in my stack, guys. Do anybody have anything you want to pimp, promote, say hey?
This is really cool. Something if you don't mind.
Yay!
For anybody who happens to be in the Washington, D.C. area or willing to take a trip, this coming Tuesday and Wednesday is the inaugural GovCom.
That's right.
Infocom is hosting their very own government-focused trade show, like a mini Infocom. It's going to be a small show this year. It's the first time, but they've got some excellent keynotes and classes lined up. I'm local here and planning to be there covering it for Rave and just hanging out with my AV peeps. But and I know some of the other AV tweeps are planning to come into the area for the show. But if you are in or can make it to D.C. on the 1st and 2nd, it's at the Washington Convention Center in Washington, D.C. and GovCom 2011. Be there.
Excellent. Thank you. Yeah, I completely forgot about that. We talked about it a few weeks ago, but I completely forgot about GovCom. So, yeah, let me know. And shoot me a line or something. Let me know how it goes, because that is something kind of interesting. So,
absolutely. And at the very least, I will be blogging and writing about it for Rave. And I know Excellent. Rave is sending several of their other staffers there to cover it as well. So.
Excellent. George, do you have anything, sir?
Not at the moment, except the AV special about John Huntington. You think I was selling ads on the thing, right?
And where can people listen to that, George?
That is avnation.tv. Did we put a slap echo on the back of that, right? Also, we are looking into making some other shows. So if guys are interested in joining our panel, guys and gals, please contact us. We'd love to have you.
Yeah, don't get me in trouble, George. Guys and gals, anybody?
That's right. Let's hear it for the AV chicks.
Yay! Woo!
Hey, the AV chicks have been good contributors to this yes. to this group. You know, even though I haven't been able to be on in recent weeks, I do want to throw my congratulations out to Tim Albright and all the contributors of AV Nation and AV Week. We have had over 1,000 downloads now in the past 90 days.
Yeah.
So nice. huge milestone for a project that's less than or just right at 3 months old. So
yeah, 3 or 4 months old. Yeah.
Yeah.
So yeah, it was pretty cool. So
excellent.
And we're to that end. And I don't talk about myself very much, but to that end, I'm humbly shocked at the reach of this thing because. Obviously, the U.S., which is where we're based, but in Canada, which is where Matt Scott is based, and I, you know, he's not the only AV guy, but I think he's the most famous AV guy in Canada.
Or at least his hair is.
He's my favorite AV guy. Yeah, his hair is. But there's also a number of AV people, AV peeps around the world, both in the UK and Russia and actually Saudi Arabia,
yeah.
Norway. It's really crazy the number of different contacts we've made. So yeah, it's kind of cool. So. Yeah, that's all I've got, guys. You can check out AV Dawn Mead on our website, also on the Rave Pubs blog squad. If you don't know where that is, that's ravepubs.com. Dawn, thank you very much.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. You can follow her on Twitter if you'd like at AV Dawn. George Tucker. He is in New York. I'm not going to say where in New York, just in New York because
it sounded so pained. Oh, George. Yeah.
No, I'm thinking about. I don't want to get in the argument about the fact that you're not in New York City, but I think you're in New York City because you're close enough. So
that's considered New York.
No, it's not.
To an outsider,
no, it's
it is.
Not. George, correct him. It's not New York City.
No, I'm not going through this again, buddy. Tell
ya. It's not New York City. Sorry. Jeez.
It's not Manhattan, but it's New York City.
No, it's not.
I'm three beers short again. I know an argument on this. All right.
Okay. Well, we'll take that one offline.
You can check out George at his Tucker Twos. Shoot, I have screwed this up.
Go ahead, George. Tell us your Twitter ID.
TuckerTuesdayTypePad.com.
Thank you. He also works for World Stage, and you can follow him at Tucker Twos at Tucker Twos. Michael Drano across from me. He works for Tech Electronics in St. Louis. He's an integrator. You can find him at Michael Drainer. If you'd like to follow me, mine is at TD Albright. I can't think right now. At TD Albright. But more importantly, please do go by the website. It is avnation.tv. avnation.tv. We have put a survey up there if you would just kind of let us know what you think. It's a way to get feedback from you in addition to the emails. But to you know, let us know what you like, what you don't like. You know, we can make changes and stuff like that. So, thank you very much for listening, and that's all the time we have for AV Week.